Today's episode of the Open Mic Podcast is brought to you by Uber. Uber is probably one of my most favorite apps that I use on my entire phone. I take advantage of it constantly when I don't feel like driving. And with the holidays literally just around the corner, you don't want to be hopping in the car and driving off, especially if you've been tipping back and having some of that holiday cheer. It's very easy to use. All you have to go is to your app store, download the app, put in a credit card or a debit card, and off you go. Now, you're probably thinking to yourself, Brett, I don't want to be spending any extra money, especially around the holidays. I just spent a ton of money on gifts. Well, guess what? I have an early Christmas present for you. If you use promo code BrettM9732UE, that's BRETTM9732UE, your first ride is on me. Have a happy and enjoyable holiday season.
It's time for the Open Mic Podcast with your host, Brett Allen. Broadcasting live from the Bay Area studios, here at the Open Mic, no topic is off limits. And of course, you never know who may stop by. So sit back, relax, and enjoy today's show.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome into episode 113 of the Open Mic Podcast. It's good to be here with you on this beautiful Bay Area weekend. We have a great show lined up for you. Zane Lamprey is joining me from Podcast One. And I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while. He is a comedian and he's a podcast host. He's an entrepreneur, brand builder, just a real powerhouse all around. And we have the privilege of talking to him today. Super stoked on this one. Yeah, it's just going to be amazing. And he's a conservationist as well. Just so many different things. It's going to be fun. Thanks for joining in today and being a part of the show. Christmas is almost here, man, next week. And we're going to be taking a small little break from broadcasting. So I wanted to put out one last episode for the holiday season. And then we will be back either just before or after New Year's. I'm not quite sure how we're going to do it. We're not doing any interviews next week. So maybe we'll release one more episode. We'll just see how it goes. But anyway, hope everybody's got all of their Christmas shopping done. I spent some time at the mall today with my son. And, of course, we went and did the Santa thing. It was a lot of fun. We had a really good time. But we're, like, standing in line. And the line is, like, I would say at least an hour long. So we decided to jump in. We're standing there. And, of course, you know, I do a bathroom check with my kid all the time before we, like, go do anything that's going to require any length of time. And so I ask him if he has to go potty, and he's like, no, I'm good. So sure enough, we're in line. We're about 10 minutes out from meeting the big red suited man, and my kid tells me he has to go to the bathroom. Unbelievable. So my stomach just sank, and then I turned around to look behind me, and there was a line double the size of what it was when we originally got in place to meet Santa. So fortunately, there was these awesome people in front of us and behind us that said, hey, there's a Red Robin just right there. Why don't you take your kid to the restroom and we'll hold your spot? I was like, really? And they were so nice. So shout out to those folks. They probably will never listen to this, but it was awesome that they did that. And we met Santa and we had a lot of fun. So there's that, and all the Christmas shopping is done. So I hope everybody has a great holiday season. Again, it's just been so fun this year. And as a matter of fact, I have a Christmas present that I want to give to all of my loyal listeners. Now, with the holidays coming, driving drunk is definitely not a good idea. It's a horrible idea. And especially when you're tipping back that Christmas cheer, going from house to house, party to party, you want to have a stress-free time without having to think about getting in a car or driving or even finding a designated driver. Well, Uber has partnered with us for this episode, and we want to give you a free ride. If you use promo code BRETTM9732UE, that's BRETTM9732UE, you can have a free ride on us. And thanks to Uber for reaching out and being so willing to help be a part and bring this podcast to the airwaves today. That's promo code BRETTM9732UE. It's very easy. You just go to your app store, whether it's on Apple or Android, and you download the app, put in the promo code. You got to put in a credit card or a debit card. But if you're using the promo code that I gave you, you can just get your first ride to your destination on me. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you. So without further ado, let's get to our guest. Super excited. Zane, welcome into the show. It's good to have you here today, my friend.
Likewise. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I'm super excited to chat with you. You do a lot. You're an entrepreneur. You're a comedian. You have a television show. You have a huge brand. You've built several brands, actually, and I want to talk about all of that. Let's start with your television shows. Before we met, you sent me a screener for a show that is going to be premiering in January. If you wouldn't mind talking about that, it's hilarious.
What episode did I send you?
Now that you ask me.
What happened in it? I'm testing you now.
I know you are. I did watch it, I promise you. You were some foreign country you were in.
Well, that's the show. The show is going to foreign countries. So, okay, we've narrowed it down. Did I send you Switzerland or did I send you Machu Picchu?
Machu Picchu, yes.
Oh, there we
okay.
go. Okay. The question is, did I throw up in the end?
Did you throw up in the end? I don't think that you did. I know.
Oh,
you...
yes, I did.
Okay, so maybe I'm thinking of a different one.
I'm keeping track of strikes here.
I know.
Did I get attacked by a dog? A St. Bernard? Because that would be a good suggestion that it is, in fact, Switzerland. Was it Mexico? Was it Grand Cayman? What stuck out? What stuck out for you?
Well, I'll tell you what stuck out about it. The fact that you have a show, period, about that, and you travel country to country
fine.
Drinking alcohol is like the best thing ever. It's hilarious. So how did you come up with this idea? Where did it come from?
So, I mean, I think it was back in 2005, maybe late 2005. I just met with a production company out here. I'm in Los Angeles, where they wanted to do like a, it was called You Should Open a Restaurant. It was a show where your friend is such a good cook that you basically nominate them, and then the show comes in and turns their house into a restaurant for the episode.
Okay.
And so they wanted a host. And so I went in to interview, and they said, "Wow, you're fantastic, but you're just not right for this part." And I was like, "Why?" They said, "Well, your manager didn't read it right. We were turning the person's house into a restaurant. We want a sous chef. We want a bartender. We want waiters. We want a host." So the host, there's no host of the show. The host is the person who seats people. That's the role that you're here talking to us for.
Oh, wow.
And so I was like, "Oh, okay, you're right. That's wrong." So I laughed, and you know, we laughed. It was fine. And then one of the guys in the room chased me down the hall. As I was getting on the elevator, and said, "You know, we have a show called Three Sheets, where the host would travel around the world and explore different drinking cultures and stuff like that. Would you do that?" I'm like, "Yeah, that'd be great." So, you know, it's funny. I'm in Los Angeles. I can't tell you, and my wife and I were talking about this yesterday, about how much just bullshit is just spewed out in Los Angeles. I can't wait to leave. And it's just like, people tell you one thing and then there's no follow up and they blow smoke, and it's just a very inauthentic environment. Well, these guys said, "Hey, we'll call you, you know, this week." And sure enough, they called me. Well, they were Screaming Flea. They were a production company based out of Seattle. Well, they didn't realize that they had to be authentic to their word. So they actually called me, you know, and we actually went through and did it. And it was a quick process. It wasn't all this bureaucracy and waiting around. They're like, "Hey, we like you. Do you like the show?" "Yes, I do." "Okay, great. Let's do it. First things first, come up and shoot a pilot." So I went up to Seattle and did the went to a Polish social club where all the Polish community was based around, and so everyone in there spoke Polish and they drank vodka and had a big party every weekend or whatever it is. And so I went and just blended into that and made that my visit to Poland. The network saw it, 2 weeks later after they put it together, and 2 weeks later after that we had an agreement, and then 2 weeks later after that I was on my way to Ireland. And so it happened really quick. And you know, I remember getting to Ireland with me and Mike Kelly, who is the executive producer of the show, and you know, it's kind of like, "What are you looking for? Like, what do you want this show to be?" He's like, you just do your thing. We like what you do, so you do it." Like, there was no instruction like, "Okay, go into this scene, and then I want you to sit down and talk to them, da da da." I was like, "No, you go. We'll do our job with the cameras. You do what you do." And then that was it. And so it worked. And it was for a network called NHD. I didn't even have an HD TV at the time. Like I said, this is 2005 or 2006. And so I didn't know I hadn't heard of the network. I didn't think anyone was going to see it. So I just, what was great about that is that there was no, I wasn't cautious. Mm-hmm. I was myself. I wasn't trying to impress anybody. I was just who I am. I was curious. I was naive. I was funny when I could be. And just me as a person, I'm a considerate, kind person. And so I think that resonated with the people that I was sitting with, and that resonated with the viewers, and we had a good time. So that, you know, that was a 4-year run. We did that for 4 years before the network went down. You know, there's only room for so many networks in the HD tier at that time, like mm-hmm. from a bandwidth perspective. And so I think like Discovery Channel came in and took over that spot. And I went on to, I'll just write off the story. They had a Save Three Sheets rally in LA where about 600 or 700 people showed up, and we marched through Beverly Hills, went to a few bars, and then marched through like all of the networks and stuff, and just to show them that, you know, there's a fan base that wants this show. You guys should buy this show. And then I went to New York like 2 days later and did it there. Well, there we had over 1,000 people. We couldn't even count them. I remember the cops just didn't even know, like, we didn't have a permit to, you know, I don't know what the permit's called for, an assembly or whatever it is.
Sure.
And so they're like, who are you? You know, like, so I had to have the cops walk me through. Well, one of the people in that march, when we were at the last bar, I found out, who had been with us all the time, was Mark Cuban. So he's like, hey, I want to do the show. And, you know, but Three Sheets was a little tied up or whatever. And so with ownership or whatever. And so we did a show called Drinking Made Easy, which, while Three Sheets was an international drinking show, Drinking Made Easy would be domestic. And we did 3 seasons of it. We ended up doing more episodes of that. I think we did 51 episodes of Three Sheets and like 61 episodes of Drinking Made Easy. That network went away. he turned that into a music network, live music network. And then I did Chug for Nat Geo, which is me traveling by train, doing the same thing internationally, learning about drinking cultures. And during that time, I also did a show called Have Fork, Will Travel, which was the same idea of the show, but was with food. And that was for the Food Network. And then, so right now, as we talked about before I went off on my long rant here, I shot a show this past summer of 2018, for Four Sheets, which is basically revitalizing Three Sheets, but improving it where we could, and we are confident that we did. You liked it so much you couldn't even remember what you watched. And so that comes out on Drink TV in January. So I don't have the details right now, but depending on when people listen to this, they can go to... you know, just go to, actually, the show's called Four Sheets. Just go to foursheets.com, and that'll link you right to the network. You can watch the show. You can watch an episode for free and appreciate it. And that's it. What do we sum up right there? 13 years?
Yeah, that's a long career. And it will air next week. So we can definitely get it out before the new year. So
yeah.
You've done this a lot. You've just been involved with comedy and television for so long. Did this just come natural for you, or did you have a aha moment in your life?
You know,
where you were like, "I'm funny, I can do this."
You know, this is it. I have to always decide: how much of the persona do I carry into an interview like this, and how much of my own personality do I bring back? It's peeling back the persona of me and me are the same, but they're different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the persona of me is the good time, happy, everything's awesome, kicking ass, going out, having drinks, and just everything is amazing, and I've had all these shows, and all this stuff is great. The reality behind the scenes is that it's been a very difficult journey. You know, you can get 2 things from the story I told you. One is that I've been on TV and multiple networks and just doing amazing shows and traveling around the world and really having it's just an amazing life experience. But on the other side, my shows have been canceled, you know, 5, 6, 7 times. So it's always a struggle of like, you know, the show gets canceled, you pitch it to other networks and they go, well, we don't like drinking content and da 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 da. And then I have to decide, do I want to just leave that world altogether? And then it's a constant battle. And then it's also like, you know, like you were saying, the humor is really the through line of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And so do I just, you know, it's so funny. I was like thinking about this last night. Do I just say, forget everything. And I just go on the road and do stand up and paint in my garage when I'm home. Mm-hmm. You know, I like at the end of the day, like that might be more of who I am. Move to Colorado, live on a ranch, have animals, paint, spend time with my family, and when I can go out and tour, I tour, but not like I did when I did my first tour, which was I had the first season of Drinking Made Easy for Mark Cuban. we traveled around for 90 days, and I did the TV show during the day, and I did stand up at night.
Oh wow!
So we sold out like House of Blues and those big, you know, 500 to 1,000 seat venues, and it was quite a toll. And I was not home a day, you know, for three and a half months really. So that was tough. I mean, of course, my wife was a producer, so she traveled with me, which is great. So that sort of keeps it going. But in this case, like, you know, and it's probably going to happen this summer. I'm probably going to do a stand up tour, hopefully along with shooting my show, but not concurrent. You know, I'm not.
You would kill yourself.
I'm not in my 30s anymore. So it's like part of it is like, yeah, would I kill myself? But I guess the reality is like, would I burn myself out, you know? Mm-hmm. And the thing to always keep in mind, you know, as an entertainer, and as I explain the persona and the real person is that when you are entertaining, you are the persona and you need to be on. Mm-hmm. You can't, you know, I'm at times a very laid back person, but when I'm doing an interview like this, or when I'm excited and doing things that I like, or performing, or in a show, then you know that I'm on. I'm still me, but it's an elevated version of myself.
Yeah, and I've talked to a lot of comics and just entertainment people in general, and you probably would have a very successful career if you just did comedy, if that's all you really wanted to do, along with your podcast and that sort of thing. But the whole television aspect, I imagine, just adds levels of anxiety maybe and stress just trying to make it all work.
It's such a delicate and frustrating dance to go and talk to these networks who there's often this fickleness, but really at the end of the day is like, so I go in and talk to this person, let's just call them person A, right? So I pitch them the idea, or they pitch me the idea, or whatever, or I go in with another company, or whatever it is, and you pitch person A, and they love it. Great. But they then have person B that they need to answer to, and that person B has person C, and it often goes to like a D, like the head of the network. So it just works up the chain. And so what happens is person A, at the end of the day, they want to make great stuff, but really what's most important to them is making a living. Mm-hmm. And paying their bills and not, you know, and staying employed, right? That's an important thing for people. And so person A that I'm pitching to now sort of channels what they think person D is looking for. So they don't want to take chances. They don't want to go outside of the norm. And the shows that I have done are a little atypical. You don't find a lot of these type of shows. And so they will go, you know, so they are unwilling to take a chance because of what's up the chain. Mm-hmm. You know, so they always want to, everyone A, B, C, D, A, B, and C always want to channel what D wants. And that makes sense. Sure, that's the big boss, right? Like you want to please that big boss, and you start to think like that big boss. And it's kind of like a musician or a group that has they're like you'll call them a one hit wonder, because they have nothing to lose. They throw it all out there. They make an amazing song, and then they get big, and they don't want to lose what they have, and so they start being cautious because they don't want to lose where they've come to. They can't afford to take a chance, because if they take a big chance, they could succeed, but they could also fail. Mm-hmm. So it's just this whole psyche of things that you deal with, and that's the one side, right? Like that's the one side where you need other people to, you need a person, right? The D, the person at the top of the food chain, to make that decision to determine, you know, whether you'll get a show or whether your show will stay on the air. It's all based on ratings and advertisers, all that kind of thing. The other side, like you mentioned, is my podcast, is Zane's World.
Yes.
And stand-up and things that I could do forever, because if the people are enjoying themselves, they'll come see my stand-up. If I'm doing a good job in the podcast, you know, where in my past podcast I talk a little less because I want to hear what other people have to say, but, like, you know, this happens to be on me, you know, like, that's really up to me to do the best job I can do. And if I do a good job, then people will listen, you mm-hmm. know, whereas I could do a really good job on a TV show, but then the network goes off the air, or the person who bought my show is fired, which has happened. Or the network changes, like when I was on Fine Living Network, it all of a sudden changes into Cooking Channel. And so we didn't have life there, which is, you know, so there's all these things on both A and B. And that's why I was like, if I could do stand up and paint in my garage and my underwear, like, I'd be pretty happy, because I'm doing what I want to do.
Sure.
And if people like my paintings, they'll buy them. And if they like my stand up, they'll come and watch it. And so, you know, you get to a certain point, you're just like, that's also the advantage of all the hard work that I've put in up until this point, is that I could do something like that because I've made a bit of a name for myself. So at this point, I could do those things and get noticed. I couldn't have started my career, you know, like that necessarily.
Well, I remember, seeing you even on, you know, with Conan or Carson Daly back in the early 2000s. I was like, okay,
Hey, not that early.
I know. Well, I'm 43, so it's not that early. That's very true. That's always the fun thing about interviewing a comedian. I'm always on my toes, but I have to really be on my toes.
You can't win. Just don't try to win.
Yeah. And that's the thing. As a caveat, it's funny. I was watching this comedian. He was posting videos on Instagram. Why do audience members always try and not acquiesce with the comic on stage? It's so funny. Like, a comic will ask a question because they're doing their crowd work, and then the audience member thinks that they're going to be able to outsmart the comedian, but there's no way on earth that that's even going to happen. Have you ever had that?
That is a hot button for me, because there was something, what did I just see? Oh, I forgot his name. That he was being heckled. This happened like yesterday or 2 days ago. This guy was being heckled by a fan, a football player for the Rams. And then he turned around and they just were heckling him. He walked up there and he's like, you know, like, you know, in other words, he's like, what do you got? Like, show, like, you're so tough, show me. And then, you know, they back down. It's like, you know, why is it okay? Like, why is it okay in that stadium for them to think that it's okay for the fans to say things about him and his family and just, like, insult him and try to get into his head to make their team win? At the end of the day, it's just a game. Like, chill out, guys. But, like, you know, but that's the same thing. It's where a fan, it's the same thing as a heckler. Like, if I'm up there on stage doing my comedy and somebody that's never nutted up to be able to go up on stage, but someone at some point told them they were funny. So they think that this is their opportunity to, like, show the people that they're with that they're actually as funny as me, even though they never had the balls to get up there themselves and try it. But what's really difficult about that whole process is that when I'm up there doing like stand up, it seems free flowing, because it should. And at some point there is that kind of, you know, energy to it, but it's most often within any comic, it's most often a well choreographed, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, hour, whatever it turns out to be. And if someone tries to derail them, it's very difficult. Like, if someone's just mouthy, because one thing is, if someone's in the front row and I have, and this has happened to me where there, you know, there's 800 people and someone in the front row just keeps interrupting me or rushing the joke or whatever it is, you know, only a few people around them can hear them, but I can hear them.
Oh yeah.
But if I give attention to them, they're going to get worse, and no one else in the audience can hear them. So, you know, I have to sort of move past them, but they're now in my head, and, you know, and you want to be like, "Hey dude, shut up." Like, I'm up, I'm doing my thing here. I know that you think you're funny, but you're being interruptive and da-da-da. Well, guess what that does? That deflates the energy of the entire room.
Sure.
And so as when you're up on stage, no matter what it is that you're doing, and anyone who's ever on stage knows this, like you have an energy that you have to convey, and it can be derailed, and it's not an easy thing to tell someone to shut up while also being funny and having the person understand. So, and now if I tell them in a funny way, now they think that I'm having fun with them. It's like, no, I'm just trying not to lose the rest of the group and just telling you to shut up and leave. But you know what I mean? Like, it's you can't do that, because if you're harsh, then everyone's like, whoa, dude. And then all of a sudden you lose the room, and now you got to earn them back. It's not an easy thing to do. And I hate it. I hate it. When I did my stand-up tour, initially I dealt with a bunch of that, which just, you know, I just had to figure out ways of dealing with it. At the end of the day, I just had my tour manager just like hang up by the stage. I'm like, dude, if someone's being disruptive, just go and tell them just to stop. Like, just tell them stop or you'll have to leave. Like, I don't want to have to deal with that, you know, and have to figure out how to, like, you know, bring people down, because it's always, you know, sometimes they're drunk. They don't even, you know, remember. Like, people have emailed me the next day, like, I'm so sorry, I was drunk, and, you know, I don't even remember. I'm like, oh, that's great. So you're not even taking accountability for what you did, you know? The next time I did it, I did music. So I did comedy and songs. Well, I couldn't hear anybody, you know? So there's nothing that they could do or say, because I couldn't hear them. So, like, because I'm playing music and they couldn't interrupt the song because everyone's singing along, whatever. So that was a little better than that, but I was also hiding behind it, so.
Yeah, Mike Birbiglia is a comedian who's really good at dealing with hecklers. I don't know if you've seen a lot of his material, but he handles them very, very well, to the point where you are just like, you don't want to even be in the room anymore at that point. And it's not mean spirited, but he just,
it's an art.
It's an art. It's an art. Yeah.
Yeah. I know him. It's not an easy thing. That's just something that he did that wrong before he did it right. Mm. You know, there's so many times that he did it where it backfired on him before he realized, like, the few things. Like, I had a buddy that would just say, like, how about, you know, dude, shut up. Well, how about I give you like a coloring book and some crayons, and you can sit there and, you know, like, draw because you're an idiot. Like, you know, it's just like he found ways to say it to insult the people. But then a lot of times they think that they'll shout something back. And I've never, ever been that person, even before I ever got up on stage, that would like ever be disrespectful. But I mean, I don't know if it's either I can hold my drink or I wasn't raised like that or whatever it is. But like, it's one of those things that drives me nuts. It's those people that, those gutless people that are just so insecure and think that they're going to be the ones that can, you know, go up there and, like, I don't know what they're thinking. Like, all their friends are going to be the next day like, oh my God, you were the funniest person ever. And it was so much fun going to the comedy show with you, and you disrupted the comic. Oh my God, that was so awesome.
Oh, no.
Can't wait to bring you to another one and have you ruin another night.
Yeah, very embarrassing. Well, I want to switch over to the entrepreneur side, because you have built several successful brands, but I want to talk about the drinking jacket and that, which I think is awesome, which I want to order one of those. Even if I just put my coffee in it, I think it's a smart idea. How did you come up with that idea in particular?
When I was doing Three Sheets, I was not making a lot of money. You know, it's funny because people were like, ooh, what kind of car you have? Like, you're on Hollywood, you're on TV. It's like, yeah, dude, I was making like $2,000 an episode. The first year I did 8 episodes, you know, minus my manager fee, whatever. Like, that's like $16,000. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like,
it's there, not like, a lot.
No, there was not money. Even when I was doing, even at the last season, it still wasn't even paying at that point, at that time, now mortgage, at that time rent. And so I was like, I got to figure this out. So the network didn't care what I wore. So I was like having, sorry, as I burp up kombucha. So I was like, you know, I said, hey, if I make some t-shirts, can I like wear them? And they're like, yeah, sure, whatever. So I ended up making t-shirts that I would wear in the show, and I knew there's a big enough fan base, and people started buying them, and it was like that did fantastic. And then I started custom making them a little bit, and I remember talking to someone who was making them for me, and I was like, hey, what can we do? Can we make a sweatshirt and like embroider it and, you know, whatever? And so then I was like, I really want to make a bottle opener zipper. And I talked to another person like, yeah, we can do that. I'm like, what else can you do? Like, anything. I'm like, whatever. So then we started sourcing it overseas and then developing it. And me learning at a completely new trade and industry. And once I learned how to do that with some mistakes, some great stuff, some things that I needed to improve on, then I basically did one through Kickstarter. I did the drinking jacket, which was sort of the, you know, had all these drinking features, a beverage, like a koozie pocket, all this kind of stuff. And then, you know, I realized that calling it the drinking jacket was sort of like a joke. I mean, it was a sweatshirt. It was a multi-purpose, innovative sweatshirt. But you didn't have to be a drinker to want this jacket. So I then formed my company Adventure. I called it the Adventure Hoodie. And then I made improvements to it. And then I changed the name of the company to Adventure, the first E being a 3, because we plant 3 trees now with every purchase, trying to, you know, if now we're really as much about travel as we are about, you know, drinking. So yes, it can hold your beer and keep it cold, but like you said, it can also hold your coffee and keep it warm. Mm-hmm. It's got a built, the bottle opener zipper was cute, was cool, but it was a little heavy, and sometimes it would sort of start to work its way down as you were wearing it because it was a little too heavy. So now the bottle opener is in the pocket. It's really small, but it's still there. You know, drinking gloves were a little bulky, so we reduced the size of those. We improved the quality of it. So now, you know, Adventure is a great brand where I have some amazing people that are working with me, working for me, on it. But it was the evolution of really the me wearing a t-shirt turning into the sweatshirt, and then now having an outdoor apparel company where we make a bunch of great jackets that all convert into travel pillows, as well as have those cool drinking features. So, but you know, I wanted to above all make a cool jacket.
Mm-hmm.
Rather well,
it's
than
definitely the jet for sure.
Yeah, so a cool jacket and a well made jacket, and then all those innovations that would actually work and people would actually use.
Very handy for sure. What advice would you have for someone who is a young entrepreneur and they're wanting to build a brand? If you could give, I'm sure you have people reach out to you all the time who want to ask you questions like, how do I start a podcast, or how do I get on podcast one, or how do I don't know, there's probably a million questions I would imagine. What one piece of advice would you have for that person who is wanting to maybe just, it covers a lot of things, but just.
But it's all the same thing. I want to have a TV show. I want to do this. I want to start mm-hmm. a product. I want to do all these, you know, and people understanding my sort of entrepreneurial nature, and they have that same sort of spirit in them. And really at the end of the day is just do it and fail, you know, do it and fail, go fail, go fail, go fail. And then you'll figure it out. Like I can't tell you how to, it's the same answer of how do I start a spirits brand, or how do I get a TV show, or how do I start a clothing company, or how do I start anything else. It's hard work and figuring it out, you mm-hmm. know, and when it comes time to question whether you should quit or keep going, examine that very closely, because oftentimes you should quit. You know, one time, it's funny, I started before I was even doing like my TV stuff. When I moved out here, I was doing TV stuff, but I wasn't making any money doing it. So I decided that I was an illustrator, an artist. And so I started making greeting cards, and I was doing hand drawn greeting cards, and they were good. I mean, whatever. I had a bunch of stores that were interested in them. And I talked to this husband and wife that had been doing it for a few years, and they said, you know, how's it going? And I explained, you know, here's what I'm doing, whatever. And they're like, okay. And I said, I'm also, you know, doing TV. And they're like, wow, that's, you know, the greeting card business is competitive enough without you splitting your time between multiple things and not really wanting to be 100% into this. And if your heart really is in doing TV, then you need to stop doing greeting cards and just do TV. Mm-hmm. If you want to do greeting cards, your greeting cards are good enough where you could make a living doing it, but then you're doing just greeting cards. So you need to figure that out. And so it was a great phone call. I like when people hit it to me straight, which a lot of people have done. you know, not always, but often. And so I hung up the phone. I took all of my greeting cards, all my supplies, and I put them in a box. And the box is still in my garage, which is, you know, 20 years later. And so that was a great piece of advice. No, I did not want to be in the greeting card business. I wanted to do TV. So you're right. Stop. Just focus on one thing. Don't feel like you can diversify yourself until you get to a point where one is working well enough that you can start to branch off of it. Or like with me, like doing TV is what helped me launch all my brands. Mm-hmm. From the Zane's World podcast to the adventure clothing brand to my rum company to all these different things, like me being on TV was the catalyst for all those things. And so, you know, people just need to bust their butt and learn a lot. You know, one guy was pitching this show to me, and he loved it, and he couldn't get anyone to buy it. But he was like, they're idiots. It'd be a great show. And I was like, yeah, but everyone's telling you no. Mm-hmm. You know, and you've been pushing this show for like a year or two, and everyone keeps saying no. You know, you need to create another show. And if some point someone says, oh, no to one of your other shows, and then you slide this one in, at some point it goes, that's fine. But like, I know the environment of what people are buying, and what you're pitching is not a show that people are buying. So you need to be aware of that. If everyone's telling, now there's the same story with like, you know, like, I don't know, like the Rocky Balboa script or whatever it is. Like people, everyone kept saying no, no, no. And then eventually they said yes, and whatever. But like at some point you need to know when to listen to your consumer, your potential consumer, and just not do it. At the same time, you need to know when to not give up. And that's a tough one, right? Like there's no magic, there's no formula for that. It's just, you know, I as you and I started this phone call or this Skype for this podcast, I had another phone call. Well, mm-hmm. for me out here, it was 7:30 in the morning and like, you know, and they're like, oh, do we wake you up? I'm like, no, I'm up at 6. I'm up at 5:30. What, you know, like, how am I going to get anything done? The day's not long enough. I got to be up earlier.
Sure.
And I function better in the morning. So, like, you know, there's so much competition with everything these days. And, you know, there, of course, you can start new businesses. You just need to be aware of the market you're walking into and mm-hmm. understand what, you know, call it your USP, your unique selling proposition. What makes what you're doing so special above others that have tried to do it or are doing it? Why do you think that you can do it better, or what do you bring to it that's different? So it's always a struggle when you're an entrepreneur, or whether you're on TV or whatever it is. There's always somebody that wants your spot, you know? Mm-hmm. So you gotta fight to get it, and then once you get it, you gotta fight to keep it.
Yeah, I agree. Even doing a podcast, you know, it's very competitive, and you have to just do this purely for the joy of doing it. I haven't made a dime, really, and I don't know that I will. I hope that I do, but, you know, the point is that I have the privilege and honor of talking to celebrities like yourself and other entrepreneurs and thought leaders, and that in itself is just a blast. Because if it wasn't for that, I don't know, you and I probably wouldn't be having this conversation.
Probably not,
you know. And I had another guest who we were talking about, you know, mentorship and advice that they had for people who were looking for a mentor and that sort of thing. But after the show, we were talking, and she's like, you know, another really great hack to get in front of people is to have a podcast. And I was like, yeah, that's a smart thing, because you have an opportunity, 30 minutes here, to ask as many questions as you can and be coherent and have it all flow well and bring the best value to you, the guest, and to the audience as well. So,
you know, it's funny. So there's a few things to that. And then just two quick, one point, and then a quick story. The, you know, people who are mentors out here or really anywhere are not going to mentor somebody that doesn't show potential. Mm-hmm. You know, so someone comes out here from, you know, Scranton, and they want to be an actor, and they just show up, and then they want a mentor. It's like, what have you done? And they're like, well, I can't do anything until someone gives me a break, and you need to give me a break. And da-da-da. It's like, well, figure it out. We've all figured it out. Mm-hmm. So someone's like, how do I get on TV if you tell me I can't get on TV unless I have TV experience, but you can't. You know, so that, so it's this quandary that people have to figure out. But if you are busting your butt and you show potential, then like you to get me to come on this podcast and the way you, you approached it and talking about your show and the information you sent over, I'm like, yeah, this guy's a serious guy. This, we're going to have a good, serious conversation. Mm-hmm. He's professional. He's doing it. You know, you didn't need me to do it. You were going to do it regardless. And I think that's really how people can get a mentor or get people to take mm-hmm. them seriously is when they take themselves seriously.
Yeah.
And when they are doing it. So I don't care. Go out and make videos with your phone until you, you know, until you start making it on a better camera. And then maybe someone sees what you're doing and thinks it's cool. And then you start making. There's a guy I know who's doing, like, it's called the One Minute Joe. It's on Instagram. 1 minute movie with Joe's 1 minute movie. I'm saying it wrong, but if you Google it, you'll find it. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to do it. So he's doing it with his phone and it's good. And he's going to eventually move past that. And he, you know, I was like, dude, I'll do one of these with you. You know, I'll do one of your 1 minute shows. It's like, it's a 1 minute thing. And he shoots it on his phone and it's funny. And so he could, because he's doing it, he's not saying, hey, I have this idea. Like, no, he's like doing it. So here's the story. When I was out here and I sold my car, I had no car, which is really weird in LA. I took the money and I made a hidden camera show. Mm-hmm. And I made it, and then, well, now what do I do with it? I can't send it around because I don't know anybody. So I got the guide for Hollywood of all the agents and all this kind of stuff. And this was the days of VHS to show how long ago it was. And yeah. And so I made all my VHS tapes, which took as long to make them as it did to play one, right?
You
had to like make one at a time, whatever. And
horrible.
And then I got quotes from, you know, bullshit quotes from fake people that I put on the front. And then I wrote this little letter that was like, either I would say like, Bernie Brostein was a big manager out here at the time. And I said, Bernie Brostein thought you'd get a kick out of this, told me to send it to you, like Zane. or it'd be like, hey, check this out, Bernie Brostein, like from me, right? Like fake letterhead or whatever, to get people to watch it. Because at the end of the day, like, you know, I don't know how much you appreciate swearing on this podcast, but I'll just say you got to say F it. You know, because
no, you're fine. You're totally
okay,
fine. Yeah.
Then you got to say fuck it. You have to say fuck it. And like, you know, I'm 46 years old. I turned 47 pretty soon. 3 years after that, I'll be 50. When I moved out here, I was 23. I never even considered being as fucking old as 50. And so I'm glad of all the risks that I took, and I'm mad at the risks that I didn't take.
Mm-hmm.
So you're never going to look back and say, you're always going to look back and be regretful of the risks you didn't take, not the stuff you did do. Like that's, because at the end of the day, that just, even if it's a fail, it goes, time just makes it go away. So, mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, I got, you know, I got one of those across, Merv Griffin, if people know who that is. He created Wheel of Fortune what was the other one? Jeopardy, you know, and was a billionaire, and I got it to him and he liked it. So he owned the Beverly Hilton at the time, brought me over for lunch. We talked about it. He introduced me to all of his whole department, and we ended up making a show over there. And that was the catalyst for Three Sheets. And that was it. Like, but I had to just go off and take the initiative to do it myself. And then not be afraid to get it in front of people. And by the way, that show that I had sent out was the fourth one that I'd made.
Oh, wow.
So I had made other ones that just weren't that good, but I didn't stop. As a matter of fact, one of the buddies that I was making it with, my buddy Jeremy, I think we made two or three, and he's like, dude, I can't do this anymore. I can't. I got to make a paycheck. I can't, like, mm-hmm. do this anymore. And so he's like, I'm out. What are you going to do? I'm like, I'm going to keep going. I'm making number four, and after that, I'll make number five and six and seven, eight. And I'm not going to stop. And it was that sort of blind tenacity that got me to wherever I am today.
You know? Yeah. Like, even when I started the podcast here, you know, I just interviewed friends, people I knew from the past that I thought would be interesting to talk to, just to sort of develop a skill of talking to people and using my background in radio. And then I came across Adam's, you know, podcasting masterclass, mm-hmm. and which was awesome. And then just, I bought the equipment that he recommended that you buy. I was like, holy cow, that's expensive. And
how much was it?
Well, so I initially, I made the mistake. I bought the computer that he recommended, and then I bought a Yeti mic initially, but then I was telling everybody I had a Yeti mic, and they're like, oh God, that's the worst microphone ever. You need a Rode Procaster or, you know, a Samsung Q2U or something. Wow. So eventually I just started investing in the equipment to really get good quality, and just one guest has led to another, to another, to some really big names like yourself and other folks. And I appreciate your honesty in that, and your candor just in the fact that none of this fell on your lap. You know, you had to work hard to get to it, and you're still working hard even today. You know, like you said early on, there's the social persona, but then there's your normal personality that's chill but a hard worker and someone who just really grinds it out and puts out a great product. Where can people find you and your socials and that sort of thing, Zane?
I mean, it's all unique. My name is unique enough, so that's my advantage. So Zane Lamprey everywhere. You know, you can just Google Zane Lamprey or find me on Instagram, or, you know, listen to the Zane's World podcast.
On Podcast One and on Podcast everywhere One, else.
Yeah. Everywhere else, yeah, exactly. You can get on Apple or any of that kind of stuff as well. So, yeah, and then, you know, just when you keep an eye out for me, I'm coming for you.
Yeah, well, if you come out to the Bay Area to do stand-up, I'll definitely be there.
Done.
That would be awesome.
I'll at least have one person in the seats. That's perfect.
Who is this me and you. Psycho fan that keeps asking for Zane?
Hey,
he says he knows.
Hey, Brad, is that you back there? I can't see. The lights are too bright.
Awesome, Zane. Thank you so much for being here today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Happy holidays, everybody. Thanks again for being a part of the show this year. We'll be back here in about a week or so with brand new, fresh episodes hot off the presses. Have a safe and enjoyable holiday season. And let somebody know that you love them, and let them know that you care. Merry Christmas, and we'll talk to you soon.
That brings today's episode to a close. Thanks for listening in. If you enjoyed today's episode, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a kind rating and review. It really does help. Until next time, cheers, and be well.